You're listening to Chasing the Word on Compassion Radio. Good morning, hon. It's time for Compassion Radio's Chasing the Word. This is the second to last in our series, a pretty long series after all, of the Songs of Ascent. And using just a little bit of imagination, we've been able to follow these pilgrims going to the Holy Mountain to do their worship and imagined ourselves walking with them. What would it be like to hear those words written by David and the other psalmists that were part of this holy worship book of travel? What would it be like if we actually approached our places of worship come Sunday, having sung all the way there in preparation for the worship to come?
That's a beautiful thought. I was thinking back about going through the Psalms of Ascent and, as you said, putting ourselves in the shoes of the pilgrims. And that means in the sandals of the pilgrims, walking across hills and dales and deserts and streams.
The dust of the Holy Land on our shins.
Exactly. And I see them camping out along the way. This is not a journey like we understand in modern day. This is a journey on foot, primarily. Maybe some had donkeys, camels, I don't know. But they're camping along the way, and these are songs that they sang as they set up their camps, as they ate their dinners together, as they packed their tents, traveled on foot along the way. These are the songs that, like you said, their playlist for the road.
You could imagine them, too, practicing tomorrow's chorus before they went to bed. Those choruses and those memories, the journey itself would be woven together in one overwhelming experience that happened maybe 2, maybe 10 times a year, depending on how faithful or how committed you were,
how portable
you were to actually go to these events. But it was one of the things that was expected of all faithful believers, dedicated to the going up.
Right.
And in doing that, you experience all those things, the ups and downs, the searing heat, the calming coolness of valleys. It was all part of one greater thing. But everyone probably had a favorite song. Everyone probably had a favorite spot on the journey. So they all had their own unique experiences, but every pilgrim, no matter which direction they came from, ascending into Jerusalem, had a common experience with those who came with them or along the same path as them. At every similar point on the journey, they would begin to practice their worship in similar ways, bringing the very best of themselves and their music and their commitment to worship to the temple with them.
In the tradition that you and I worship in, we sing the Psalms every Sunday, and it's a response. It's a we have a cantor.
Right.
And they'll sing a line, and then we respond as a congregation. And I see them having this kind of back and forth as they're going along singing these songs on the temple patio before they enter into the temple to worship, or someone is calling out a line and they're responding with the next line of the psalm. And it's just such a beautiful, full, and rich way to experience the psalms.
And often we'll cycle around to similar or identical psalms, but sung with a different melody under different seasons of the year. And when we do, it has a whole different cadence, a whole different feel. It might jump from a minor mode to a major mode. The emotional lift or the gravitas of what you're singing would sound and feel different depending on the context that we're performing it in. I think it was probably true for them too. Now, when we look back through the Psalms, there are many Psalms along the way. If you look at the special notes that are often put in the Psalms, it'll say to the tune of lilies or to the tune of whatever, musical reference about how you would actually produce the notes and the rhythms and the tempos, even the instrumentation that was used, were notated right there in their songbook. So they knew what they were playing. They knew the tunes they would sing it to. We have recast all of these psalms over the years into contemporary music, contemporary for the time you lived in. In fact, we might even put a little montage together at the end of this particular program about different ways this particular psalm has been adapted into contemporary worship. But it's such a short little nugget, one little chorus line. You could sing it, repeat it, you could take variations of it, you could go off and riff on some new aspect of it or change the pitch. You could change the time signature, you could change the whole key to sing it in. People might progress through many different uplifting versions of the same chorus as they went along, very much like modern choruses are done today. But the words themselves have had a lasting and staying power over thousands of years. We'll read all three verses of this little chorus called Psalm 134.
This psalm was sung right before the whole celebration begins. This is a song that they would have used to encourage the night watchmen in the temple to continue singing as the night progressed. As the pilgrims are leaving the temple, they invite the priests, keep up their praise, praise during the night so that Yahweh is pleased with us. And then the priests would bless them as they went out to their encampments overnight before they come back to the temple the next day for next week when we start getting into 135.
Yes.
I'm going to read from the Passion Translation, Psalm 134. All his loving priests who serve and sing, come and sing your song of blessing to God. Come and stand before him in the house of God throughout the night watch, lifting up your hands in holy worship. Come and bless the Lord. May the Lord, whom you worship, the mighty maker of heaven and earth, bless you from Zion's glory.
In more traditional translations, it would simply say that phrase at the beginning. Come, bless the Lord, all you servants of the Lord, who stand by night in the house of the Lord. And that phrase and that meter of that sound kind of plays itself into a lilting melody that we've sung many, many times. Come bless the Lord, all you servants of the Lord, who stand by night in the house of the Lord. It has almost a jauntiness to it.
Yeah.
But there's real power here, too, because as you said, there's a going in and a coming out. And God has said so many times throughout his scriptures, come fill my house with worship, the praise that honors me, a worship that I'm worthy of.
Right.
He says, fill my house. You can't spend your entire time in that house. There's just not enough space, even in God's house on the Temple Mount, for everybody to be inside at the same moment. But waves upon waves could come as close as possible. The outer courts, if you were especially blessed and honored to, the inner courts. The women would have their own courts, and they would have other kinds of functions, the different things that were happening, the smells of offerings and sacrifices, and the worship happening from all quadrants. And then they would have to leave to go back to their encampments for the night. And as they went, as you say, the priests themselves throwing censers around in circles and blaring horns, blessing the people for coming, calling them back to more worship tomorrow, and blessing their rest as they left.
Mm.
God from his temple is saying, bravo, bravo. Thank you for coming. Here's my blessing over you. May my peace rest upon your camp. May the evil of this world pass over your camp. Come back tomorrow. We'll worship more together.
This first verse is encouraging those who are actually leading the worship.
Yep.
If you ever played team sports or any kind of sport, really, and you hear the crowd cheering you on, it just motivates you to want to do a better job or to persevere, especially runners. You know, I think about a marathon runner or even a sprint runner, and they're giving all they've got out there on the track, and the crowd just begins to rise up and cheer them on and have that extra oomph to get them across the finish line. That's what I see happening here with the people that are coming to worship. They're encouraging those who are leading the worship. Go, you've got this. Go on through the night. We'll be thinking about you. We know that we're leaving this place in great hands. We're encouraging you as your servants of the Lord, this ministry laying on you. The pilgrims themselves are trusting these leaders to go before the living God on their behalf as they sleep.
He doesn't say specifically in the translations that we've read so far that this is a psalm specifically of David. He very well could have been. So I can imagine him walking across the courts because he's got business with God that's burning in his heart. And David had a habit of going at all hours. So people had to be ready to have the door open for him to come in to wherever he was allowed to go in. And people have to jump, be ready for this. So I can see David calling across the mount as he walked. I've walked that Temple Mount before.
Mm-hmm.
Where the Dome of the Rock stands now is probably someplace that was right near where the original temple and the second temple stood. And there are places that you can see all of the Temple Mount from the center as you're crossing. The Dome of the Rock down to the left and then across the east toward the Kidron Valley and the Mount of Olives beyond that. And then a view down towards where the Al-Aqsa Mosque is now. And then down below that hill to the city of David. It's just an all-encompassing view. You can see David marching across all of this, and it's a couple hundred yards. It's not a small walk. Calling out, saying, come, come bless the Lord, all you servants of the Lord. Wake up, dudes. And in that spirit of David, I can see all of these pilgrims coming across the temple ready to bring down the house.
Yeah.
You know, they're calling and blessing those who serve in the house of the Lord. I don't know how they organized all of that kind of leadership, the responsibilities that Levites had, but you know they were there and they were prepared and they were trained for this. They are lifting up those who have prepared well to lead them where they are. But I still can't escape the image of David out there, maybe in the middle of the night, just saying, dude, where are you? We're going to worship God.
In this tradition of Judaism, they had someone in the temple awake all night,
yes.
Traditionally. Someone tending the flames,
right.
Making sure that the incense was constantly burning and taking care of the things that were going on that needed to continue.
Because God never rests.
Exactly. It would be a difficult job. I am not someone who can stay up overnight very well. And so I would need all this encouragement for sure. And they're saying, lift up your hands in the sanctuary and bless the Lord. Keep your hands lifted up. And that reminded me of Moses and how as the battle raged on, he was beginning to grow weary. But as long as he kept his hands raised, the Israelites would conquer and would have victory.
Or raising his staff across the Red Sea.
Yeah, and he began to get tired. And so on either side of him, he had Aaron and Hur lifting his arms up to make sure that their strength became his strength. And I see that the pilgrims here are doing that for the servants of the Lord that stay in the temple overnight. And they pray with hands lifted up. So, yeah, they lift them toward the sanctuary is what it says in 1 Timothy. These are traditions that we have kind of incorporated into our worships as well, as we are now the Gentiles worshiping in modern spaces. And we lift our hands in the sanctuary. And this is one of those psalms that is really drawing us in. He goes on to say in verse 3, may the Lord, the maker of heaven and earth, bless you from Zion. And this is taken straight from Numbers.
Yeah.
Where the blessing of the Lord, that was a really popular song a few years ago. The Lord bless you and keep you, make his face shine upon you and give you peace. They incorporated that into their worship here at this time in the temple, saying the Lord of Zion, his footstool, his throne, straight from there is coming the blessing. And we're praying that down on you as you serve in the temple.
The image, I think, in modern minds that would have been at the center of the Jewish idea of Zion is that it wasn't just this mountain, but this mountain was part of something that was bigger. It was higher. It was directly connected to the seat of God's throne in heaven. Whether getting Bibles into closed countries, relief supplies into dangerous refugee camps, or providing training and theology books to barefoot pastors as they begin their ministry. These are all the kind of things we love to share with you every day. And more importantly, they're the kind of things we like to do. The first and best way to reach us is through our website, CompassionRadio.com. You can also support us with a call during Pacific Time business hours at 1-800-868-2478. You can also text COMPASSION to 53445 to give right through your phone no matter where you are. And our mailing address is P.O. Box 77160, Corona, California, 92877. We so much value your messages and letters. And know this, your gift is deeply appreciated. Thank you for loving us in this way. At the center of the Jewish idea of Zion is that it wasn't just this mountain, but this mountain was part of something that was bigger. It was higher. It was directly connected to the seat of God's throne in heaven, and earth as his footstool. So it represented things here. It was as high as we could go in the land, but it was the lowest spot God would go coming down.
Mm.
So they're looking at Zion as being almost kind of like an eternal elevator.
Right.
It would take you right to the throne room of God up in the highest heavens. Looking through this upwards waterfall of worship and this downward pouring of blessings, they're seeing might and power and glory being transferred and recycled, I think, between earth and heaven. Like a pillar of fire and the pillar of smoke that the Israelites remembered from their journey across the desert. It was always present and always there. So for them, they assumed that the temple on that mount would stand forever. They had no other concept of it. Once it was there, you couldn't shake the image.
Mm.
And for them, approaching that was approaching that heavenly elevator.
Mm.
So what do you make of it, honey, when the psalmist talks about blessing you from Zion? When they're calling out to God like that, people in the temple are speaking back over the people as they leave, may the Lord bless you. Is it just this place, or are they painting a bigger picture for the pilgrims that have come?
In some ways, it reminds me, too, of the way Jesus taught us to pray. Thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Mm. It's bringing heaven into our presence. It's drawing down, like you said. It's God coming down from a lofty place into the middle of the people. And we see that in the person of Jesus Christ.
Mm-hmm.
He has come down. He is the ultimate blessing from God the Father. as he dwelt among us. It's not out of reach. It's right here for us. The blessing is being poured out. And we have that through the passion of Jesus. He has poured out himself completely on our behalf and completely to show us what it means to have communion with the Father. He came down and had dinner with us.
Yeah.
And that's the blessing that we receive. It's not just that this one time or this unreachable thing that is out there for us to grasp at. It is a personal, internal thing that we receive because we are in him and he's in us.
I would think that some of the courage to expect that God would be personal with me is the fact that he's being very personal with all of us. Mm-hmm. There's no one being left out. As we approach together as a body, we'll all be filled and we all draw strength from each other, drawing strength from God. We don't feel so isolated. I would think that the images they had about God's holiness and his presence and his power and his might were like the mystery of the power of a lightning bolt. Hmm. It could slay you in a second. No one knew how. And that was the kind of energy and power that God seemed to have. So it is not a comfortable or easy place to approach. And yet we are called to march right into the center of an electrical field beyond human imagination. So they would go together and expect God together to do great and mighty things in their midst. But what you said earlier about the Lord's Prayer, that puts a whole new spin on it for me. Mm-hmm. I hadn't thought about starting with this image of the Temple Mount, the center of God's seat on earth, as being what Jesus means by saying, "Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven." And will has to do what you're thinking about, what you decide to do, what you are doing, what you will always be about doing. Mm-hmm. So if God is always about coming down and coming to and coming among and drawing us up in, when he says, "Hallowed be your name, thy kingdom come, thy will be done," I'm thinking the sense of that is not just, may your name someday be holy, mm-hmm. because we already know he's holy. When Jesus says, "Hallowed be thy name," he's reinforcing and reiterating something that we know to be eternally true before we ever showed up. God is always holy. It's right there in front of us.
I think about it as being, it is holy in my mouth,
yeah.
Hallowed in my mouth, that I would honor his name. I would be respectful of his name.
Would not be tainted there.
Yeah. There's a verse in Deuteronomy that I looked up that goes really, you know, hand in hand with this. And it's Deuteronomy 30, 11 through 14. "This commandment that I give you today is not too difficult for you, nor is it distant from you. It is not in the heavens that you should say, 'Who will go up into the heavens to bring it down to us so that we might hear it and observe it?' Nor is it beyond the sea that you should say, 'Who will cross over the sea to bring it to us so that we might hear it and observe it?' No, the word is very near you. It is in your heart and in your mouth so that you might do it." Hmm. That is what Deuteronomy, being the beginning when Moses is bringing the law down into the Psalms, when we're worshiping at the temple with the Psalms of Ascent, and then on to Jesus as he says, "This is how you pray." All three of those bases are coming together for me in Psalm 134, and I'm seeing how Jesus is reminding us that his name is holy, so speak it in a holy manner. And Deuteronomy says, no, it is in your heart, it is in your mouth for you to do. And then Psalm 134 is saying, here we are right now at Zion, we are in the temple and worshiping, and the blessing of the Lord is pouring out on us.
And not completely without us responding that blessing, that word, that holiness back to him with our own lips. I mean, how can you not speak when you've been empowered to speak, when you are full of God's word in you that just wants to burst back out of you? Mm. I understand being completely kowtowed in front of awesome power that is overwhelming to you and your lips being sealed. But it doesn't seem like we're being called on here to be silent. We're being called upon to lift up the name of God to him. He has an audience to enjoy it, and the rest of us to understand it's a confession that we say together. We're not being told to stay silent, although I do believe that God calls us to deep and meaningful silences often.
Yeah, absolutely.
This is not one of those moments. This is a moment for the big opening chorus and the great finale. This is the beginning of all things and the end of all that can possibly be about God, because he's going to be in the middle of this making music with us. And if you want to do a great concert, you call the greatest musicians there are. Mm-hmm. And God is saying, I'm the guy that's got the bass line. I got the backbeat. I got the strings. I got the chorus. I'm a conductor, but I'm also a great audience.
Yeah.
God is thrilled to be at the center of all this.
And he's asking us to do it with our whole bodies. Yeah. He's saying, raise your hands, lift them up toward the sanctuary. Open your mouth and speak out praise, sing out praise. He's saying, get involved with this.
Yeah. And when I think about why we do that, one, it's an exercise for the soul and the body. We literally have to stretch muscles and we sing bigger and louder and we're emboldened. But we know the limits of ourselves. We can't even go past our fingers. And yet we imagine that somehow our praise is due.
Yeah.
And then if we're wise, I think we'll imagine how big is God's reach? How far can he go to reach us where we are?
Mm-hmm.
And compared to our little speck in this universe to his grand majesty, it's again overwhelming. But then to think that he's joining with us and he actually is in the music, in the center of it with us. He's not somewhere way off across the universe looking through a telescope at us.
Mm-hmm.
He's right here.
He inhabits it.
Yeah, he makes a home of this.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you think about it now? The temple is physically gone. There are those who are dominionists that want to see a resurgence of construction in Jerusalem to see all the old things become literally present again.
Mm-hmm.
And there are plenty of other believers, both Jew and Christian around the world, that say, no, that's not it. We've already entered into this thing that Jesus talked about. This holy place, we aren't ripping things out of heaven to make God come down, and we're not building things up to heaven to prove we can get to him. We are literally letting him come to us and establishing himself in us. So we don't need to worry anymore about physical things. If God wants us to have physical things, he'll put them there. But he says he wants our energy to be focused on bringing that love and power and authority to the entire world through service and laying down our lives for others.
Mm.
So we are worshiping anywhere we go. The temple goes with us because we are the people of the temple.
We are the temple.
And most Christians around the world believe this. They're not often challenged directly to say, well, this is what it's going to mean for you right now to be part of this. But when they are challenged that way, then God comes in all kinds of new power, challenges us to go out and do things his way for his purposes. And again, it's not about the preaching and the forcing and the imposing of what we think God's will is. It's about the presence that loves and serves and always redeems. He is calling us still every day to go out there and do that, and we have plenty of opportunity. There's not a continent or a country or a town across this planet that doesn't have a need for God's presence to show up.
Right.
He will lead us to those places where his kingdom reach is going and lets us be part of it if we say yes and we ask him to let us be part of it. I think God's big yes will always be there when we say, can I go with you? God's going to say, yes, I want you at my side. I want to be at your side when you discover the things I have for you and for the world. I see great joy and aspiration that we've seen it in the temple. We've been present with others that are worshiping him, and he imbues his power and his presence and his joy and his peace in us. So we've sensed it. When we go out into the world, it's just another chorus. It's another verse of this song. It's the next verse of Come Bless the Lord. And we find ourselves being the ones that are serving in the house of the Lord, the one he's building everywhere. I see us playing a lot of different roles in this song. We are the ones rushing to the temple to worship. We're with David, arm in arm, marching to the temple with joy, expecting God to hear us and to experience God. We're expecting God's service to be there ready to help us. And we're expecting God's blessing to pour over us on the way out the doors.
Another verse popped into my mind as you were saying all these things from 1 Thessalonians, where Paul says, pray without ceasing. Mm-hmm. Don't ever stop praying. Always be praying in your spirit.
Never don't pray.
And I used to think, oh, how is that possible? But I think it's an attitude. And this psalm reminds me that there is someone in the night, there's someone watching that is praying for us and with us. And the Holy Spirit prays for us and with us. So this is not an impossible task. It is very much a possibility.
The Anglican tradition, there's a daily prayer that ends the day, every day, that combines the watch overnight with those who have to sleep and rest after a long day. And it says simply this.
Guide us waking, O Lord, and guard us sleeping, that awake we may watch with Christ, and asleep we may rest in peace. Amen.
And when we pray that, the assumption is we're passing the baton to somebody else who has the night watch. And if no one else does, God himself says, I got it, and I'll watch over you. So we appeal to God's presence, whether we're awake or asleep. And we trust that God will guard us in every way we need guarding, and that he'll invigorate us for all we need to do while we're waking.
Mm.
So this is a very wakeful moment in the temple of God here, Psalm 134. Of course, we have more to talk about next week in Psalm 135 as we begin to close the whole series on Songs of Ascent from the Psalms. Thanks for joining us on today's program. We'll see you tomorrow for the next Compassion Radio. Whether getting Bibles into closed countries, relief supplies into dangerous refugee camps, or providing training and theology books to barefoot pastors as they begin their ministry, these are all the kind of things that we love to share with you every day. And more importantly, they're the kind of things we like to do. Remember, friends, Compassion Radio is always a coalition of the willing. Are you willing to help get out God's good news stories of the kingdom really living the gospel in the 21st century? Oh, I hope so. Just visit our website, CompassionRadio.com. You can also support us with a call during Pacific Time business hours at 1-800-868-2478. 1-800-868-2478. You can also text COMPASSION to 53445 to give right through your phone, no matter where you are. And our mailing address is P.O. Box 77160, Corona, California, 92877. Again, that's Box 77160, Corona, California, 92877. We need you, friend, so contact us today.